Hi everyone, welcome to the TommyResearch.com Analyze Your Trade, episode number 151 for February 23rd, 2021. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of Timing Research, and today we will be discussing your trade ideas. So you should be seeing Michael Filiguera's screen right now, his charts. I've arranged for him to be our guest today, and the option professor is moderating again, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, great, David, and great to have everybody here today. We're going to go over the list of stocks that were submitted. Some of them look pretty interesting. But before we do that, we're going to introduce Michael from Logical Signals, and he is going to give a quick background on himself, and then we're going to go into some of the things we talked about a few weeks back, which have come to pass. So let's start out with an introduction, Michael, and take it from there.
Thanks, Jim. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Michael Filiguera. I am with Logical Signals, and little introduction. I've been trading for 40 years or more, and now I was an options trader. I've traded around the globe in many different international cities and also here in San Francisco. I started to day trade about 8 years ago and continue to use Elliott Wave and Fibonacci number sequences to assist me in determining where the markets are sitting, what the potential for particular moves are up and down. And I'll leave it there so that we then can just move into where we want to go. And
sure. Okay. Well, let's start out by reviewing some of the things we talked about. We were talking about the wave count and the Fibonacci numbers and other technical indicators that you're going to review right now that indicated that we could be near a high point in that 31,700 on the Dow and the NASDAQ and the QQQ, and that we could see a bit of a rollover, which is exactly what we've seen. And it's more than a little bit of a rollover in the FANG stocks and the tech sector. So let's review what you saw and what you're seeing now, Michael, so people get an idea of what it looks like out there.
Okay. So we're going to continue to use the S&P, and this is a chart of the E-mini, which is the future. And we had left off where this is the big picture. This is a monthly chart. You can see it goes back to 1984. So we have quite a few years here. And what we started out to do is I start always with the biggest picture, and we went up to a cycle level. And so right now we're counting a 5-wave cycle level advance. And it actually began back in probably, I think, like 1979, 1978, way long ago, is where this particular cycle degree advance started. And so what we have so far is cycle wave one, cycle wave two, cycle wave three, which took us up to the highs originally back just about the turn of the millennium. And then we got a cycle wave four, which included not a new high in the S&P, but a new high in the Dow. Cycle wave four ended, and now we're counting cycle wave five. So this began after the fifth wave up began after the 2008-2009 economic collapse that we saw, and we started to get our marching orders going higher. And within this cycle level advance, we're going to have 5 waves of primary degree. So the quick reference to Elliott Wave. Elliott Wave is building blocks. I can take it all the way down to a 1 minute chart, and those building blocks are going to build the picture for the 1 minute, the 5 minute, the 15 minute, the 30, the hourly, the daily, etc. So they're all building blocks, and we can count down every little single move, but on a monthly, you're going to see it gets all kind of scrunched together, as you can see up here. So quick update. What we have now done within this cycle wave five up, it's going to have 5 waves of primary degree. Primary one, primary two, primary three, because this third subdivided twice, once on its own, and then internally it subdivided again, which is not unusual. And then we had primary wave three here. And then here was that March 2020 collapse that we got at the start of the pandemic that produced primary wave four. Now I get to move it down, and that's going to start to make more sense. We can go down to the weekly chart, and now you can see here's the bottom that we had in March of 2020, and now we're starting to build a primary fifth wave up. And what we have within that is 5 waves of intermediate degree in an advance. Wave one is up, two is a correction, three is up, four is a corrective, and then the final fifth wave. Again, the same guidelines and rules apply no matter what degree you're on or, you know, where you are. So within then a five-wave advance or decline. So it's the sequence. If it's a five-wave sequence, your third wave is going to be the longest and the strongest in whatever direction you're headed. That's what's going to happen. So, and that is quite clear here, where we had the completion point for intermediate wave two, then we had intermediate wave three, and then four, and then it started to rally. And once it broke here, let me go back down, let me just go down to the daily, and you're going to see that each time we go down, here again is the end of primary wave four, because that is the low down here, March of 2020, and then we start to build. Wave one, wave two, wave three, wave four. So these are small. That's intermediate one, intermediate two, and now we're down to the minor level, minor one, two, three, four. Then it breaks down again as this third intermediate third wave extends, breaks down and extends. And so you can see how I counted that out again. This final waves up were very, very difficult, because you can see these, we had these drawdowns, big drawdowns, but they were constantly just almost just day, just for one day. And then the market took it all back the next day. So it presented a lot of problems, but in all honesty, in the context of where we are, the market is in new high territories. This is play that you're going to see in that type of a move. It's difficult. You get quick declines. You get rallies coming all the way back, another decline. It gets very mixed up, so to speak. But if you take your time and you count it out, you usually will find that you can get the pattern down, and you then can expect what's going to come next. So here I have intermediate wave three, which broke down to its own five, which internally broke down into a five. And intermediate wave four was a decline that we saw at the beginning of February. And that actually many of us were thinking, okay, that's it. We got to brand new highs and we're not going to go any further. Then boom, we came down. And then it started to rally again strongly. You can see one, two, three, four, five, six, 7 days of basically straight up. And then we worked our Fibonacci numbers internally. And now I can go down to the hourly chart. And again, we're going to see that this was four and here's the five up to that high at the, and I'm, let me pull this down and you're going to see it. I did have that label of the five. Now, if indeed, you're going to see that I did not put the primary wave five completion here yet. And I'll tell you why, because I'm watching now this thing comes off. And what we need to look for is on an hourly chart, the formation of five waves down, followed by three waves, and then an additional five waves down, followed by three and another five down. Because I'm counting in on an intermediate level, I now have to get an intermediate level five wave decline on my hourly chart before we'll start to pin a top, you know, a cycle level top at that high. And now just to also fill in, this particular high came in within Fibonacci resistance levels. One of them was being 39.50. This just peaked its nose right above it and then just started to peel off, which gave more credence and strength to that being the completion point. But look at how this thing is now forming. We have beautiful five waves decline down to here. Then we had a three. Then we start to come off, but it doesn't reach all together. So the way that I'm counting this is, believe it or not, that's a five-wave structure from that high down to that low. This is the three-wave rally that we would expect. And if I run, oh, I got to change my, to tell you also what I do, we run Fibonacci just to make sure that we are, that our rallies, oops, that didn't work there, that our rallies are falling within parameters that fit to what we're doing. So this, if this is a wave two, it actually came up pretty high. That's 618 right there, or, you know, 62% basically. That's a little high for a wave two, not totally out of the woods or, you know, off the charts, but a little higher than I would expect. But what followed, I was like, okay, now what we had here is an additional five waves, then a three wave, and then one, two, three, four, five. So I'm getting to the point where I'm thinking, if I have to, I can label this right here as the first intermediate wave down within the corrective phase now in force. Now we get today's intense rally at the last hour. And they pushed and they pushed hard. And I was speaking, you know, with David prior to us starting today. And I said, it just really felt like somebody was forcing the short squeeze into this market. And that could have happened. And, you know, everything's electronic. And so we have a lot of lack of information in terms of who's pushing, who's doing what. When we were all standing on a trading floor, you always knew who was coming in, who was coming in as a big buyer, who was coming in as a big seller, because they announced the trades. Here, it's all anonymous. So you kind of have to go with the flow. But this now, if it continues to go higher and breaks above this 200-day moving average on an hourly chart, I would say that this is a complete three waves down. And that would then tell me that's not the ending point for that primary wave five, and in turn, the cycle degree wave that we're doing. So we still are in some type of a little bit of a limbo in terms of what is the bigger picture. It started off great, then it started to get a little fuzzy, and this push almost to that 200-day moving average on an hourly chart just kind of really threw a wrench into my thoughts. So I'm going to leave it kind of open. Now, technically, we would be looking, you're going to see that this is a momentum indicator as well as stochastic. It's beginning to roll over, and it was slightly overbought, but who knows what's going to happen overnight? Who knows what the Asian markets and then the European markets are going to want to do? If they're going to go like, holy cow, look what they did. They pushed higher, and they push higher. This will also go with it, and we could easily come above that. So we have to leave open all possibilities right now. So
yeah, I was looking at the 3,800 area as a place to bounce, which is what I talked about in our newsletter last week, is that we were going to roll over here because that 31,700 on the Dow and the 3,960 looked like a nice turning point, which it was. Yeah. But I did think 3,800 area would get a bounce. And if we closed under there and with the VIX above 25, that would be the double whammy that would really tell you that a more substantial correction is on the horizon. We went to 27 on the VIX, but we closed well under 25. We went to 3,800 on the S&P, but we closed at 3,881. So those two numbers I would suggest keep an eye on, as well as other things. But 3,800 underneath and above 25 on the VIX, I think those would be two very good warning shots. If you look at the prices on the S&P, you know, in late December, breaking above 3,800 was kind of a resistance zone for a bit. And it pulled back in early February, in late December, and held the 3,800 area. So the bottom line is that 3,800 area was kind of a form of resistance. So it bounced out of there today. But, you know, we fell 14 points at the close from 3,895 S&P down to 3,881. So it didn't really close on the top tick.
No.
But it did, you know, obviously there was some pretty big selling in a vacuum, and that selling got executed, and there was no real selling under near the 3,800 number. And so that's why the short covering came in and the spec buying came in, because the selling dried up, because it was pretty heavy selling between 3,900 and 3,800.
Yes. And this morning, the Dow and the S&P really weren't ready to go down, but they were forced down because of the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ and the tech just started to sell. And because S&P wants to be better balanced, quote unquote, they now have Tesla. They've now got a lot of these bigger tech stocks or bigger NASDAQ stocks.
And so, we've been touting the banks and the energy and the cyclicals and the value sector. And they actually have held up much better than the tech, because I think people are rotating out of tech into value because they want to get 3% dividends and they want to get companies that aren't fraud. And so basically, that's why the value and the banks and people like that are hanging in there much better than the Teslas and the other ones like that.
Which makes sense, you know, as people are going to start to rotate out.
These higher interest rates are no joke. I mean, you know, you've gone from 0.5% to almost 1.5% this year, and it's still a low rate, but it's three times what it was. And that is going to change the calculation on high valuation stock, which is basically what's been occurring.
Right. And we've not seen, we've seen more of an exodus out of bonds versus new money coming in.
The thing that got me a little bit is, obviously we're talking about the technical side, but the quantitative guy at JP Morgan was on TV yesterday, I guess, and he was acting as if between now and June, it's going to be a tremendously fabulous time to be on the market, and you should be hitting the gas pedal on risk on. And so that's a little bit in direct contravention, unless we're going to see a situation where they go up and they go up to that 4,000 number, and then it ticks over going into May and June, because he also was concerned about May and June being a time frame where weakness could come into the market.
Right. And you hit a very important point. We cannot give up. We cannot say it will not happen. The S&P most certainly has the possibilities and the potential to go back to 4,000.
Right.
Go up to 4,000. And that's kind of my point. And describing this particular count, but leaving open my higher labeling here. This could be it could just be a corrective wave, large, but not unheard of. And this thing just roars right back. And it literally can happen across the board. The Dow can certainly go up. All of them can. And what would push it? Who knows? So I'd rather not really try to figure out the who, what, when, or why of a market move, but just to be able to be prepared and have parameters on both sides. So you know when I'm not going to be short anymore. I'm going to be long. I'm not going to be long anymore. I'm going to move to the short side. I'm going to take profit here.
Or if you're an option guy, do some covered call writing, do some collars where you sell calls and buy puts, replace some of your trades with call options so you have less cash risk. All of those kind of things would be the playbook. If you think, hey, listen, if you go to 4,000 and that's only where you're going, that's only 1.2% higher than the recent highs. So it's not like there's a lot left on the table if that's really what they think the high is going to be.
Agreed. But you just hit another extremely important point. And that is, yes, it's only one and a little bit over 1% higher from where we are. But then the decision that has to be made is like, what type of trader are you? Are you a very long-term trader?
Right.
Are you conservative? Are you more of a swing trader? Those are all going to dictate how you play what's going to happen. Because if it's really going to go to 4,000, you're thinking, well, if that's all I'm going to get, I'm going to use that to get out of positions, right?
Yeah, getting above 3850, 3860 today, if you're bullish, was a very good thing to happen.
Yes.
Because a lot of the moving averages on a shorter term basis come in at around 3870, 3860, and 3850 was a little support that broke. So getting back above the 3850 into the 3880 was very constructive. And the transports, which were down pretty sharply, they closed up on the day, which is a very good sign as well.
Well, they all think that the airlines are just they're back in play. Another thing, and I will just mention these moving averages right now. No, this isn't the hourly chart. And let me kind of try to open this up so that we can see it. Here, look at these moving averages. They're flat as a pancake. And so was the market. Then we went down, they reacted. But then as this rally came up, it takes a lot longer to turn the boat on an hourly level.
Oh, yeah.
So right now, the 200 is still above the 50. The 50 is still above the 20. The 8 is now, of course, being driven higher. But it was a very strong rally. All switch around. So what I'm saying is this is still lined up for this market to move lower. If we're looking at pure moving averages. Now, it closed right at the 50, which is not bad. It's more in tune to say we will see additional upside tomorrow. But if we do, then we're going to be looking for these moving averages to begin to turn higher and to fall into position to propel the market up to 4,000, if that's indeed where it's going to go. So I would be looking for the 20 to get above the 50, the 50 to get above the 200, et cetera. And that's going to put things in line. If that happens and it happens and you see it on a daily and then on an hourly and then further down, get out of the way and buy.
Yeah. And a good line in the sand is today's low.
Yeah.
Very absolutely. Good. I mean, if the guys at JP Morgan and are talking about a big move, then we should be done with anything underneath 3,800. Yeah. And the other thing is the higher it goes, it doesn't make it less overbought versus the moving averages. And I have the 1 year, the 2 year, and the 3 year moving averages all in the lower parts of 3,000. So, you go to 4,000, it doesn't make it less overbought. So at some point, the piper does get paid. And I think that May, June timeframe to a lot of people, including Elliott Waivers and Cycle Guys, they do believe the May, June timeframe is going to see a significantly lower price.
Right.
And if that's the case, then the next 60 days are kind of days that you'd want to start protecting your portfolio a bit.
Or rearranging to see where it's going to fit best. You're absolutely
correct. Yeah. I mean, your asset allocation, you could look at your asset allocation model. You could look at, different hedging tactics and risk reduction tactics.
Right.
Because, as you can see, Bitcoin goes from 58 down to 44 in a couple of days. And Apple is the poster child of everybody, but it's just gone from 145 down to about 120 something
and now it's balancing itself out. It's just kind of sitting. Amazon raced up, now come back down. They all have. I mean, Tesla, all of the big players are the bigger stocks.
I've done. But you had about a 15% drop in the price of Apple.
Yeah.
Not too many days, really.
Right. Shall we go over some stocks?
Yeah, let's start hitting them. First one up is going to be WDC.
WDC. Oh, no.
WDC, Western Digital.
Yeah.
And that's kind of in the semiconductor region, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Now, this is the hourly. And let me go to the daily, because that's going to maybe show us a little bit more information that we want. What a beautiful rally this stock has had.
Yeah.
Wow, very nice.
No, and if you look at a longer term graph, this is something that has traded above 100 a number of times in the last few years, back in 2018, I guess, or 2017, it was above 100. So this is one that might be playing a game of catch up as well.
True story. Drawing studies.
RSI looks pretty good on it from what I'm looking at.
You're right. I just wanted to get rid of that volume so that I get more chart. Yeah, let's do that. But yes, this, I'm out on a monthly chart. A, B, I'm going to give it all the way C down to here. And then, but it's really from that, it's only done three waves up. On a monthly chart, it has to break 72 if indeed this thing is going to continue to power higher. On a monthly, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 months up. Pretty impressive. I am impressed. Stock is getting a little bit overcooked up here.
Yeah, the RSI is in the blue zone, and that's not the best zone to start looking at it originally, but it is coming down on a correction. What about that 60 number? Staying above 60 is kind of important, isn't it?
It is, and you've got the 50 sitting at 57. You've got an 8-day coming up there.
Yeah.
And if they all kind of converge there, then yeah, that's going to be it. So if 60 to about 57, 58 to 60, I would agree. And I don't like the form. So if it's going to pull back, it definitely has to hold that to produce another rally and switch this from three waves to five. If it switches it to five, it may still be all you get, but it's at least going to be going to finish on a little bit more positive note and leave open the door for a continued rally. And again, if Western, you know, if the broader markets are going to continue to pick up and a lot of tech is going to come back, Western Digital will go with it. If they've got some good product coming out, or, you know, obviously their earnings are not so bad recent.
Yeah, it just had a pretty quick 11% drop. And really what it's doing is it's filling the gap that it created between about 68 and about 67. So it's gone into that gap here today. Mm-hmm. And now the question is that all it's doing and it's going to go retest lower? Or because there does seem to be, at least on a short-term basis, some resistance around that 68 number. Huh?
Yeah. This participated in that initial market declines. And again, here one morning, you know, they just drove it down through the floor and then it did not look back. In fact, this stock against others really came back much better than what we'll probably see in others just on today. So
I'm showing a PE ratio of 121 though. So that's one of the poster boys for maybe the interest rate thing hurting them. Huh?
It's a little frothy. Yeah.
All right, let's turn to space, SPCE and Virgin Galactic, and see what the word is there, because that's another one that has lost some of its mojo, going from 60 down to 40, which is a 30% drop in a very short time.
Yes, and if you remember, we talked about this one before, and I was not real favorable on the stock continuing to move higher. In fact, here we have all of our Fibonacci still on this thing. This is from last time we talked about this particular stock, and it came down below a level that we thought, and look at the gaps. That was a huge gap. Yes, overnight. Did they come out with some type of a news that punished it, this gap, more today?
Something obviously came out, probably the fact that it has no earnings and no yield, and and it was probably, wasn't it probably a sell the fact, you know, once they landed on Mars, this thing landed on the junkyard?
Maybe, you know, I'm smiling because it's like, you're right.
Let's just do a couple of things that are a little off the grid here, because there's three stocks that the Barron's guys were talking about that are in this medium of space. Let's take a look at what they look like. HOL is the first symbol.
Holicity.
Uh-huh.
Holicity. Yep.
They're in different businesses of space, you know.
Oh, okay. Well, you can see this thing sat at $10 forever in the day, got all the way up to what, 13 or $11, and then gapped.
It looks like it's drank the same poison pill though, huh?
Yeah, and then it gapped lower.
Yeah.
I, you know what this reminds me of, Jim? And you might want to comment on, it's like these are unproven, but they have a play. And when all the attention gets, because of the United States, China, and who's the third? India, I think it is. That that landed on Mars. I know we got the rovers going, but they got to collect all their information. So it sparks a lot of interest. People throw some money at it, and then boom. So you're right.
I'll tell you, the other two that I had looked like the same deal, where they had big run-ups and now they've gone into the tank job. But are they going into the tank job just to fill the gaps and go into a more better value? I don't know. But the other ones in this thing were SRAC and SFTW. But again, they all are dancing to the same music, which is we've landed on Mars is the good news, and we're tanking the space stocks is the bad news.
It is, but I have to tell you, if I'm looking at these moving averages, yes, the 200-day moving average is still sitting pretty low. It came down, went through the 50 today, but closed back above the 50, which is positive.
Right.
They remain in position. You know, these are the very short term. I mean, this isn't only an 8-day, and there's your 20, and there's your 50. They remain in position that they could turn higher.
They got a lot of volume. This SFTW that I'm talking about now, SFTW, that did almost 8 million shares today.
That's everybody getting out.
Yeah.
Looks like, isn't it?
Well, let's see what it's been averaging. It's been averaging only a million. You're right. It's everybody getting out. Eight. But of course, everyone getting out, after they get out, then that dries up a bit, maybe.
It does. And, you know, again, do you have any reading on what the short percentage is?
Yeah, I do. It's not much. So that's not an issue. SRAC. I want to see what kind of volume SRAC, because this is obviously one that the ARK funds are involved in and all that kind of stuff. But they've been getting whacked pretty good on that ARKK today, I guess, too.
Right.
This one here did about a little under two. So the other stock did a little higher volume. But
the only thing that's going to equate all of this to is, you know, it's new interest. I think space exploration, and I'm well above 60, but I remember as a kid being glued for the Mercury, for the Gemini, for the Apollo, for all the launches, and being fascinated by it. And I think that because it's new, getting people up to take pleasure trips into space, that all can kind of be exciting and new, and you get a bunch of money coming in. But it reminds me of the pharmaceutical lines.
Yeah.
You're coming out with a new drug, and it's going
to biotech,
blah, blah, blah. And boy, this goes, but then phase 3 trials flop, and this thing just gets, the stock gets annihilated. Same type of plays here. You get all that excitement, but the second it doesn't do it, boy, they all exit. So I would be, you have to be very, very careful about what you want to put your money in.
All right, let's come back to Earth here and go over Disney, DIS. That's a pretty earthy company. You know, they got things like movies and amusement parks and Disney Plus and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it's been jamming. And today the tape wasn't very good, but Disney was up $5.
There you
go. Like I say, anything that has ongoing cash flow with these services, boy, they're always well received by the market, and Disney's no exception. Huh?
Well, they're going to have, Disney Plus, it's very popular, but I think they're really going to have to do a whole lot more if they can't get those theme parks open and functioning, which they're not at the moment. This could be a short-lived rally. Now, let's pull it open to the weekly. This is where we took it from. We wanted to find out. We were here, last time we talked, I think we were sitting here and we were looking for these rallies to continue what we thought you could get. Now it has reached the 1.6, 162%. That's a pretty solid rally from that would be off of that low. And I'm going to try to count this. Let's count it from here. That would be a low. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Volume today was twice normal.
There could have just been, the major funds coming in and shifting stuff around. I don't know, but you're right. This was it's a very, very bullish bar.
It's a reopening stock. You know, they hear the vaccine's working. They hear the cases are going down. They see summer's coming and they go, this thing's obviously going to open up those parks.
You pay $200 for it.
Yeah. Well, it seems extended here because the 50-day and the 200-day, where they come in at 200 days way down at 137. So do you like to buy something that's 50% above its 200-day moving average, then go at it,
That's the point. And I'm very glad that you brought that up, because this is what I think people, if you're an option trader and you're sitting there and you're busy in the market and you're a market maker in the stock and you get the play, it comes to you, so to speak. You can play it at 199, you can play it at 200, because you can flip on a dime, you can turn things around, you know what you need to do. But if you're coming in as an investor and you're coming in as a swing trader, please pick your points where you want to come in and pick your point to where you believe you're going to be wrong, so you're going to want to get out, so you've got to stop level in? And then how much do you think you're going to make? Where do you think the stock could go?
I mean if I look at your graphs, would you say this 150 area would be most reasonable simply because it's a split of the 50-day at 170 and the 200-day at 135, so at 150? Yeah. And it's also the former high points of late 2019 and early 2020. So it might be a logical place if an overall correction occurred in the market that you could maybe pick it up at 150.
And again, what I believe can happen, even in these other larger indexes, yes, the markets are getting a little frothy and we will start to look for a larger correction to take place. This is the area I would be expecting it to come back to. So your point is very valid. It's like, where can it come back to 153? For sure. But if it's going to be a part of a larger correction, I'm looking for them lower into this level, into this area here. So this is what we did to plot its climb. And we can redo a lot of Fibonacci's to kind of take a peek at where now could it go if it breaks above 200. I mean, you should have a 175 level up there. I could add that, which are different levels that you can put in. But I think it's getting a little bit cooked and likely will turn again. But S&P runs to 4,000. Dow runs to 32, 33,000.
Oh, this thing would be on the board, yeah. Hey, let's turn over to the gaming area and DraftKings, because it did get taken down pretty hard today, and then it came back up. But I'm wondering, DKNG. And, online gambling is great, but, you know, when people lose their money, you know, maybe they're not going to stick with it that long. You know what I mean?
Which is kind of funny, isn't it? Online gambling?
Yeah. Well, I mean, New Jersey has approved sports betting, and now they've approved pot. So they're going to have a lot of stoned gamblers running around, I guess.
Came down and held that 50.
Yeah.
The 40, the 200 day held the previous decline, which I think was it was October. So right off of that, now that kind of looks like it could be a five-wave decline. And so this thing going up and making new highs, I find a little bit, it's got one more high to make. That would be my call.
It could be, but it is 50% above its 200 day, and that's rarefied air. Right.
So again, with that in mind, if indeed it's going to start to break and head high and possibly get above it, your exits, you can, you know, if you need to get out of the stock or if you need to make a change.
Yeah, the better play seems to be the better play seems to be Las Vegas Sands, LVS. Check that out. That did pretty good today.
Absolutely.
Agreed. And then you've also got MGM. So, you know, if you want to look in the gaming sector, those two look like better deals right now because they've got casinos that are opening and you can bet games in the casino. You know, and you can do them online and everything else that you can do at DraftKings. And DraftKings seems to be going after the millennials, and maybe the millennials lost their money by betting on Kansas City in the Super Bowl or something. I don't know.
True. But take a look at this. This is a daily, and you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This is the seventh day up, and it really only, it would have been down except they, you know, somebody flipped it at the end of the day.
Right.
So it's starting to get a little stretched.
Yeah, it is. But it's got a good story.
It does have a good story, and I just want to go up to see what we have sitting above this thing. Oh yeah. I mean, for sure, if it really starts to break out, I mean, that would have been my call that it's done there. And then it did a beautiful, you know, three waves. Then it pulls back and you're like golden. But look what it did. It left three waves, which tells you this is going to do five up. And that's what that signal told us. So that was the area to buy down below 48 or at 48. That's where you wanted to buy it in preparation for this. So this would be a finishing move. Now it could finish up here. It could finish up here. You know, we're looking at a weekly chart. So can it go? Absolutely. But I think it's a finishing move and you're going to have another one of these coming up.
Look at FireEye, a little cybersecurity. I guess they were a little insecure for a while, and that took the bloom off the rose on this stock a bit. But it still seems to be holding up here pretty good. The 50-day average is a little over 20, so it killed that one. But 200-day is still rising, and it's at 15 and a quarter.
F-E-Y-E?
F-E-Y-E. FireEye. A lot of people really like this company long-term. F-E-Y-E. Got good short interest, 7-8% short interest, so there's some people who could cover if it gets going. going, but
wow, it did not turn around. It did participate in the rally at the end of the day, but not as strongly as one would think it should.
Right.
I think it could turn. That's the weekly. Let me take this down a couple of notches. Weekly still pretty bearish, and the daily is bearish.
Yeah, 15.25 is where the 200-day is. It probably is not unheard of that it goes down to that neighborhood.
No, and they're still lined up to go down, and the 20 has now turned lower. The 8's turning lower. This is now going sideways. This is going sideways, which is reflective of a tighter range, but they could have both turned. This was a solid break below the 50 today, and the gapped below. So I would not be optimistic on Firefly or FireEye, not right now.
All right, let's jump around to some of the big ones. We talked about Apple a little bit. Let's go over to Amazon, and a lot of people are thinking you could maybe buy this thing at 29.50, where those former lows come in. And
absolutely, why not? Yeah. And it can go there in a heartbeat.
Yeah, there you go, 29.94. Yeah,
29.84 is the 200.
It looks heavy. Doesn't it look a little heavy? All the highs seem to be getting a little bit lower, and then now the low has gone down a little bit. And is that distribution or accumulation?
I think it's actually probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, Amazon is a tough stock because it trades above 3,000.
Yeah.
You know, having it 100 is nothing. Right?
When the PE ratio used to get above 100, it used to be a pretty good sell. Now the PE ratio is showing me at about 76. So it's not in that frothy stage anymore.
No. And it continues to make, solid money. So yeah, it's a tough chart and it's a big, big stock. So it just moves too freely for my nerves.
Let's talk about NVIDIA, NVDA. That stock we were saying is a little bit extended off its moving averages. And, it's benefited from a lot of the gaming and all that stuff. But
it was really following what I was expecting for the NASDAQ. Now here, again, I'm on the daily chart. If this indeed is the high of the highs for right now, then we've got 1, 2. This was a 3 and it's putting in a 4. And if it turns and comes back down and makes a 5, that's 5 down on a daily chart. And that portends to an initial three-wave rally off of that low, but then it comes back down and likely comes down into here or lower.
Yeah.
So
let's look at one of the drugs, Bristol Myers Squibb, BMY. And that obviously is a very popular company. It's been doing pretty good, but it's now back down a little bit.
Yeah. What are they? What's their dividend?
BMY, and their dividend is 3.25, so that's pretty good. And but it seems like a company that's kind of like a sideways thing like Oracle used to be between 40 and 45, for like always. Right. This thing seems to be 60 to 65 or 55 to 65, and it's been there for a while.
Very range, and then it breaks the range, and then it gets rangy, and it breaks the range. Here again, which I know that they have a COVID vaccine, do they not?
I'm not certain. I'm not certain, but I would say this, that the 50-day and the 200-day are merging at 60, so it's pretty much crunch time. This thing starts trading underneath 60, that's probably not the best sign of all time. And if it can get back above 62, 63, maybe it's going to 70. But right now it's on the ledge, and I don't know which way on the ledge it's going to break.
And I agree with you on the moving averages. Here we're taking a look at them, and let me just pull it open so that you can see it. Come on. There you go. Don't pay attention to that. Just look at these moving averages. Flat as a pancake. If it goes below it, negative. If it can hold above it and gets above that 50, it can get a little energy. But these are not telling you to step into this market. Moving averages are issuing a caution sign. So you're right. I agree with you.
Let's look at Microsoft.
Okay.
MSFT. Looks like it's got a 50-day around 220 and a 200-day at around 210. And it's got a bunch of former highs at around 225. So you would think that if it's any good, it's going to have a hard time getting through the 220, 225 neighborhood. And 233, it's getting pretty close. Today it hit 228. So you had an opportunity pretty close to that 225 today.
Right. And their dividend is
0.96, but their PE ratio is at 35. So again, if these rates don't stop at 1.35 and they start going 1.5, 1.7.
It's going to come down.
Then it could be sayonara to these valuations. Again, these companies, and even the guy at JP Morgan was saying, they are good companies and they are going to be making money, but they could have compression in their PE ratios, and the money could go into the stuff like the banks and the energy and the industrials and the materials.
Right. And I think that's an important point that you're making, that when we have corrections in the market, it does not mean, we see Microsoft starting to drop like a stone. It doesn't mean Microsoft is a bad company. I think that what you've just added to the discussion is very important for traders, for investors, for whatever level you are investing on, you need to bear all of this in mind and what Jim has just stated so that you can make good decisions.
Let's hit the medals here before we run out of time. The first one, let's look at the poster boy for a great movement, which is Freeport-McMoRan, FCX. I mean, there's a tightness in the supply of copper and demand, but this thing, I mean, it's the FCX.
Yep, got it.
You know, this thing I was, basically bringing to people's attention in the 10 to 15 area. And obviously we've had a tremendous run up to 39. Today, it got rocky, went down to 34 and change, closed at 37.85. But, the trees don't grow to the sky, and this thing has definitely had a huge run.
It sure has.
So, basically, you're looking at a moving average at 18 on the 200-day, and you hit over 36. So, you're 100% above the moving average, and, the housing has been built quite a bit, and the real estate boom has occurred already quite a bit. So, you have to wonder if we don't get a big infrastructure bill, which could be months away, if this thing could have a pause to refresh. Because I love this company, but I don't love it at $40 when the moving averages are at 18.
I think if you're trying to ride it because you're going to exit, I think just pay attention to that 8-day, which is the blue line here. Say for example that you follow Jim's advice and you kind of decided to get long around between 15 and 16, and now you're sitting on a very, very sweet profit. You can now put your stop and ride that stop based on the 8-day moving average. If it starts to break below that, the ride's over, you're happy, you made your money. So you're not sitting open with exposure. In fact, you could use even a shorter one. And this again is a weekly chart. Using a too short of a moving average is going to be frivolous. So you got to keep it, I think, to an 8 or a 10 day. The 20, if I'm sitting on a nice profit, I don't know if I want to let it drop all the way down there. But I would use an 8 or a 10 day, and that would be your stop. Because right now you can see it's just walking higher and not drifting below that moving average. So right now, the rally remains alive.
All right, the next one is GDX, which I have been focused on because I thought it blew off at 46. I thought gold blew off at 2100. I really had no interest in it since then because I knew how overbought it was and how it was just settling down. And all this talk about 3000 gold was ridiculous in my view. So now it's getting more interesting to me because it's getting down near this 30 number. Mm-hmm. So that means it's interesting to me. But what's not interesting to me is that the 50-day and the 200-day have inverted to the downside and that gold cannot get above 1950. And if it does get above 1950 or even 1850, that would increase my interest. But right now, the only thing you can say for it is that it is much less overvalued than it's been. And the number around 30 is a reasonable expectation of support because of the highs in late 2019 and early 2020 was right around that 30 number.
That was on the weekly. The weekly does not look super positive, but I see your point. And it on a weekly basis, it dropped below, this would be 2 weeks ago, it dropped below the 50-day moving average.
Yeah, it's got lousy momentum.
Yeah, it does. You're right. But then again, it's going to be more in play because these are the miners. Gold is fluctuating, being down closer to 1700. Then up above 1800, et cetera, et cetera. So, I think what you stated is very accurate and could be followed.
Yeah, 30 is a reasonable line in the sand on the low end, but you're not going to be able to go to 40 or 50 until it can get above 35 and 37. So, if you want to wait for the river to give you a little bit of a bang at the back of your boat, you almost have to wait a little while to get more than the three people who are rowing doing it right now. Because, this could just have been a dead cat bounce because people took money out of Bitcoin and they rotated into gold. If that's all is a dead cat bounce, then you're going to have another rendezvous to the downside.
Exactly right. And I think that another point is that please, again, I'm on a weekly chart, but no matter what chart you're using, keep your eye on these moving averages. Both Jim and I stand on them. These are important levels.
I have the 1 year coming in at around 1815 to 1825. 1825. So gold getting above 1815, 1825 would be very important. And then, of course, if it breaks 1775, it opens the door to the two-year moving average, which comes in at 1630. Wow. So the way I'm viewing gold is as simple as this. If you give me 1850 and 1950, okay, I'll get on the boat. If you break 1775, call me if it hits 1630. In the interim, you're just, you know, involved in this seesawing. And the reason it's seesawing is it went from 1400 to 2100 in a parabolic move, and it's working, and it's letting the moving averages catch up to the price, which is very typical.
Yes, it is. And that's a very good analogy. I like that. Because this is what happens so often, not just in a precious metal like gold or even the junior miners. This happens in equities as well, you know, that the moving averages have to catch up to what actually trade is doing. And they will. So I think that analogy you made with the moving averages and then the prices catching up is perfect, because it's exactly.
Let's look at the dollar real quick, DXY. Because, you know, if the dollar is going to go way down, then that'll be good for the gold. But so far, the dollar has been hanging in DXY. I don't know what it is on your machine. But it has been holding 88 and 90 while the entire planet is bad-mouthing the dollar. And if it gets above 92, there's going to be a lot of people, you know, caught with their pants down, because the whole world is short this dollar. And again, our interest rate differential has returned because you get a hell of a lot more interest in our stuff than you do in Japan or Europe.
But see, that's real. Yeah. So to me, I'm wondering why if there's continued dollar weakness when we are seeing this divergence begin to happen inside interest rates. I'm with you on, I don't want to be short this.
No, I mean, like I say, I don't know if you want to buy it either, because you're basically catching a falling knife here. But the point is when you get that lopsided of a trade, meaning a negative dollar deal, and it shows you that it can't really get through 88 right now. If it does that, then obviously stick a fork in it. But why would it rally? The reason it would rally is that you're getting 135 on the 10-year. And if you went to Europe or Asia, you're not getting anything. Right. So the bottom line is that, and also we have a reopening situation happening that could be quite strong, according to most people.
True. So which I don't know. You know, it just really depends on what the appetite for buyers of bonds is going to be lower. And I think that's what's causing all this disruption in the bond market. It's like, no, I'm not going to continue to give you dollars for 0.75%.
Right. I mean, you know? I said that in March. I mean, the world is not going to loan all this money out 20 years for no interest when we're going to have GDP at 6%. We're going to have inflationary fears. And we have a dollar that went from 104 to 90. You're not going to get away with no interest for very long. And that's right. Why people who don't need money, like Apple and Amazon, et cetera, are issuing as many bonds as these morons want to buy, because who doesn't want 40-year money underneath 1%? I mean, that's free money.
Right.
Anyway, let's go over, because a lot of people might have other stocks and some of the stocks we didn't hit. How can people get a hold of you, Michael? And how can they maybe get some of your some of their stocks analyzed by you? How can they do that?
You can reach me at michael@logicalsignals.com. I welcome all emails. I do answer my emails. I do not let them go. Please feel free. If you have a question, feel free to ask. Analyzing stocks, I don't mind doing that. But if it's going to be an in-depth and you want to, you know, step-by-step type of a thing, I'm sure that we can work things out. I do offer coaching, which I would kind of call that coaching going and doing an in-depth analysis of a particular equity or index or ETF. If it's tradable and it's chartable, we can work out the chart and we can put it all together. So again, logicalsignals.com.
That's great. And as far as optionprofessor.com, we have a weekly market update where we cover stocks and bonds and international markets and the crude and the gold and the silver and the copper, platinum now, and also Bitcoin. And then, of course, we've been telling people about sugar, coffee, and soybeans, which have been big markets. So that's free of charge. You go to optionprofessor.com and put your email in, and then you're all set. And then, of course, we do have some subscription services that we're starting to offer, so you can find out about that as well. That's optionprofessor.com. Okay, great to be with you, Michael. David, I'm going to turn it over to you, and thanks, everybody, for showing up here today.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Great discussion today. So just say... Quick reminder to everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast app. And or you can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past shows and access to this one as soon as I can get the recording posted. Thanks, everyone. Oh, and just another reminder of guests for today, Michael Filigera, tradershelpingtraders.com, and the Option Professor of optionprofessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.